This is BSA by Design, a podcast about transforming healthcare educational and research facilities through expert design and insight. I'm your host once again, Brian Moore, and thank you for joining us. In this episode, I sat down to talk with Derek Selke about design features that are important to creating spaces to treat behavioral health. We talk about the impact of design on treatment of behavioral health, the impact of technology, and I even find a way to get a reference to a film called Dark Shadows into the conversation. But more than anything, you can hear Derek's passion for patient dignity, privacy, and safety. It's a really great conversation. But before we start, let me formally introduce our guest. Derek Selke is a design principal at BSA and a former member of the board of directors. He is a member of the AIA. He has been with BSA for nearly 22 years, serving in a variety of roles. He graduated from Ball State with a Bachelor of Architecture and a Bachelor of Science in Environmental Design.
Welcome to the show, Derek.
Thank you. Be here.
As is common for a first-time guest on the show, can you share where your passion for architecture and design comes from and what made you follow this career path?
Yeah, sure. Growing up, I was always around construction and design. My dad was a mechanical engineer, so I've always been around that. He also had a wood shop that I tinker around, and as a child, So I was always interested in how things tend together, make things figured out. And then my interest in art and math also, I think, helps. So when you think about all that, it kind of made sense.
Right.
And we went to the architecture review spot.
We had Justin Beadle and a few others on in past episodes, and they've talked about they rearranged the room a lot. Were you one of those as well?
Did do that.
Yeah, I'm convinced our 16-year-old is going to end up doing something along engineering or design of some kind, because he's constantly rearranging his room and just figure out like what's the best setup, you know.
Right.
I'm curious, but I've been afraid to ask this question since I've been here. What does a design principal do differently than an architect?
So both roles are equally important. Design principals typically will focus on creative vision, strategy, leadership of the design practice as a whole. Design principles can be added to a team if needed for, you know, oversight or even simply just a fresh set of eyes. Architects can also have varying roles, but often architects concentrate on the detailed design, technical aspects, and the important execution of individual projects. So design principles can bring potentially a larger perspective to a design team, not that an architect can't.
Right.
Actually, that larger perspective principle can be beneficial.
When you're talking about a larger perspective, anything in particular, like when you're looking at it holistically, is that what you mean?
You know, sometimes it's a matter of maybe aligning the goals that maybe the client has come up with, what say BSA has.
Right.
And so that different eye is available to a team, because sometimes if you're part of your core team can be very focused and
on technical delivery and, you know.
Absolutely.
Right.
So sometimes you don't mean to, which you could be very close to a project from the hill steps, bring somebody in at times to kind of step back, but that it will help.
Your name comes up a lot within BSA when we talk about expertise. And one of the main things that I hear is about your leadership when it comes to behavioral health. So I thought it would be good to have you come on and talk about this topic. So let's start here. What is behavioral health? In case people don't know.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, we do have really good resources at BSA. Brian Sander and I have worked together on the Royal Projects and Master. He's a very knowledgeable resource that others should really tap into. And Christy Adams also has the Royal Friends as well. To answer your question, behavioral health is a very broad term. In simple terms, behavioral health refers to the connection between behaviors and the overall well-being, body, mind, and spirit. Behavioral health includes a wide range of issues, including mental health disorders, depression, anxiety, developmental disabilities, mental illnesses like the schizophrenia, substance abuse disorders, PTSD, so it's a wide range, and other behaviors such as eating habits or exercise, or even substance use that can affect someone's overall physical status, wealth. So very broad in terms of the cheers.
And a lot of different facilities and building types, I'm sure, that would apply to all those. What are some of the key considerations when you're planning for spaces, then, behavioral health patients?
Yeah, so one of the major goals, Kyle, when designing these spaces is really to reduce stress and anxiety and get patients options when it comes to the control of their own environment. We have to remember that these patients are often very scared, but nervous. They don't know, they don't want to be in these facilities typically.
Right.
And you dig.
Right.
And they don't trust anybody. That's one of the main considerations you have to keep in mind, is that trust is a big issue. I mean, sheerness. It's important, very important for the staff and actually and patient to develop a trust. And when we say that, it's very important to develop trust between caregiver and patient.
Yeah.
And design can promote that. So a couple things we think about with those considerations is about patient dignity and privacy. Drivers, private names, patient names typically are best practice. So it's important to have a private name for patients because it can give them a personal space, the dignity of having that space, control their font environment, like I mentioned. And the space can be personalized depending on the patient type. And it gives them a sense of comfort and the ability to really make that space their own. So, there are some studies, though, that show that, you know, having a few semi-private names on a unit could be beneficial to some patients, meaning some patients would benefit to have a grooming, you know, and someone they could talk to privately or someone that they could potentially relate to.
Right.
Depending on their condition. So the other thing about having a roommate, it is that the roommate could be a concerned observer in the meeting. They can identify an issue, actually the staff. They could help the staff.
That they can't maybe see. Yeah.
They see or they could get call for help if needed. Another thing that we consider is privacy versus visibility. Staff need to be able to observe patients both in private rooms and in native areas, but we always want to keep a mindful effort to allow patients to have their rooms.
Sure.
One of the ways we do that is to use interval white windows.
Sure.
You can have the ability for staff to use the blinds on one side of the doors. For example, corridor side, where they have the ability to open and close blinds to check on the patient. But patient will always have the ability to control the blind as well for room sight, so they can see out when they want to. Folks, that's about the privacy.
Okay.
So that control helps them in the given process. The other thing we consider very important is the access to nature. Not in the outdoor spaces, used to nature rooms, very important to reconnect and balance for the patient. When considering our warden people, often will have views of nature, but there's an interesting discussion, I guess, the behavioral health world about realism versus abstract.
Oh.
So you have to be careful when you're using images, realistic images, because it can often trigger a patient's memory if something dramatic has happened. So for an example, if you have a beautiful picture of a wood and sunlight coming through the trees and such, it could be a beautiful image, but that
to most. Right.
The most. Yes. Could be very traumatic to some patients by triggering it, not breaking it.
Something had happened in the woods. Yeah.
Barn. Or so you have to be very careful about the type of barn work that you display.
Wow.
Figure it out. So often we'll resort to abstract art that may have a similar feel, but doesn't give them that precise.
That jarring. Yeah. Really interesting. A lot of the things that you've been saying, I'll be transparent and say I've dealt with anxiety and never had to go to a facility that we're talking about. But even just getting me to go to the doctor's office was a mental battle for myself. And I know for my family for a little while of like, hey, I think you could probably use some help, whether that be talking to someone or, you know, medication or whatever. And when to your point, when you walk into a facility and if it feels cold and, you know, and if I'm in a room without any windows, I like looking out and seeing trees and things of that nature. So this all makes a ton of sense. I mean,
you know, it's interesting that you bring it up about yourself, because according to the National Institute of Health, approximately 1 in 5 adults in the U.S. experience or live with some sort of anxiety, depression.
No. Yeah.
It doesn't mean that it's a condition you have to go have treatment.
Correct.
We all experience that in our lives.
Yeah.
As long as the But so it's interesting that you break that up. And so again, one of our main issues is just how do we help reduce anxiety and stress, solve for size in these spaces.
Right. And if that's why I was saying, I can see where a lot of the design aspects that you're talking about for these facilities for folks that are dealing with it at a, and I'll just use a 1 to 10 scale. You know, if they're at a 7, 8, 9, 10, right. I may be in a 2, 3 range, but I'm able to see and understand how if I was farther down that line, these things would be greatly impactful on my treatment. So that makes a ton of sense. How have you seen this approach to designing behavioral health facilities evolve in recent years?
So from my perspective, my behavioral health design shifted dramatically one of recent years from sterile institutional fire fence to very open, well-being spaces that really prioritized patient comfort and well-being. I knew discussed your bright natural light, what we talked about, calming aesthetics, sensory friendly. Soft frontier, for example. And there's a real focus on create the positive and less stigmatizing. So there's a greater emphasis on safety features that are seamlessly integrated into the design rather than just being over a gate. And this shift really aims, as mentioned, to reduce anxiety and encourage engagement. And there are turning to me.
It feels like, too, there's definitely been an effort to destigmatize these conditions, these things that people face over the last, I don't know, 15 plus years, but even going further back, it was like, stay with me for a second. Since we're recording this around the Halloween holiday, my family and I, we like to, you know, watch scary movies and stuff like that. Well, some of them, you know, you can't watch with your kids. There's a couple that are a little more humorous. And I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Dark Shadows. It was Johnny Depp. I want to say 2010, 2011 range, and it's kind of a comedy on the take of this. But there's a character in the movie that is, she sees a ghost as a child, and this is in the, I mean, I'm assuming the 60s, 70s, because that's when it's set, the movie itself. And she's shipped off by her family, and she's put in an institution with, you know, a straitjacket and padded walls and one of those sliding things that. Right. You know, you can only open from the outside to see and to check on the patient. I know that's an over dramatic and it was done for a comedic effect and a little bit of a dramatic effect. But there is some truth in that's how that was done 50, 60 years ago. And just the strides that we've made into trying to understand that more. So that dramatic flip and just how we've approached it as a society is probably a huge thing as well, too.
Yes, it absolutely is. And really, giving the patients as much dignity as possible.
Right.
Is huge and the sparkles.
So how do you balance safety and security with creating a therapeutic environment?
So this is always a very tricky balance. First and foremost, ENS need to be safe, and of course, both patients and staff. So in terms of safety and security, we're talking about these gamma durable materials, visibility and observation without compromising patient privacy, using installing high ceilings so that the observations don't get access to devices in the ceiling or crawl. We've got a very common practice using ligature resistant accessories and devices, which is kind of baseline, very important to do. And then the use of weighted furniture so patients can
lift it,
lift it up, and use it for self arm tumors.
So, two quick follow-ups there. Height of ceilings, what's an average height? They got to be over a certain, what's the standard, you know, there? And then same thing with the weighted furniture. Is there a worry about somebody who's actually strong getting in there and being able to lift something?
Yeah, a good point. So for the ceilings, we'd like to see that even at 10 feet, you can, you know, if you imagine moving a piece of furniture standing them on a table.
Can you still reach it?
Yeah. You can potentially still reach it even at 10 feet. But to get higher than 10 feet, it's probably very practical. Most buildings been new construction. So you can go down to 9 feet, no problem. But we try to get to 10. As far as the weighted furniture goes, I like some that we have.
A standard baseline, right?
But
weighted more than a normal piece of furniture would be,
yes.
in a similar category, let's say.
That's
like
right.
A chair. Yeah.
That's right.
Okay.
Furniture would be weighted enough that most people
wouldn't be able to.
And wouldn't be able to pick it up easily. Song people will obviously
right.
push it around. But
aside from Mr. Olympia, they would have a hard time, right? Okay.
And then you balance that kind of safety and security. You have a whole therapeutic environment. So again, natural light, I keep saying it, but incredibly important. And then she has foam colors and textures to help reduce anxiety. And then acoustics, noise can be very stressful for patients. Noise reduction, this is very important, not only during the day, but also at night. So patients can listen, sounding, to help the healing process. So flexible spaces are also important in therapy to guarantee sign spaces that are designed for both group activities as well as individual activities. And that can be challenging at times. And you also need to provide spaces that have the ability to interact, for patients to interact socially and privately. They need the ability to kind of step away from that interaction if they need to feel kind of anxiety or stress.
Closed in, claustrophobic. Yeah.
They have the ability to step away, stay in the same space. Maybe it's have their own book in that area that's still missing. But the same film will pad this on.
Well, and as I like to point out to our listeners, I'm not a technical expert. So I try to do a little research when I'm preparing for these. I'm just an average guy, you know. And I learned about trauma-informed design principles. So I wanted to ask you about how you incorporate and kind of what some of those design principles are into your work.
Sure. So for those that don't know, trauma-informed care, which I'm working with, is a model of care that recognizes impact of trauma on a person's life. It's a way to provide effective care by understanding the patient's life experiences. So essentially, the more you know and understand about patient, the better care you give them. So trauma-informed design then takes those principles into the design building spaces to promote healing, well-being, safety. A few elements we've touched on, some of these already, use of nature. And that's like a key problem creating that. But varying light level strategies as well. So we can potentially use tunable lighting, both temperature tunable as well as color, to impact the space, help patients adjust, whether it be a mood swing, just simple circadian rhythm balance, both ways. So that flexibility in the runs is beneficial to keeping a very clean and simple, organized space. So very important as well. I actually had a patient telling time, he said, when my room is clean, I feel like the nurses care about. So the design of the space, if it's well done, organized, can actually have an impact on how a patient perceives. If you go back to the trust issue, it can be a huge benefit for patient and staff. We always try to keep that. And really, you're just trying to design overall very calm environment. That's reachable.
Yep, reducing stress so that they can focus on their treatment and their care. How does the design of behavioral health facilities differ then from other healthcare spaces? Because I have heard in previous conversations on this podcast with Jen Worley, especially talking about some of the interior design, a lot of these facilities focus on nature, natural lighting, airy, focus on colors and things like that. So I'm curious, we've touched on a little bit of how they're specific to certain conditions or patient types, but is there other differences between these types of facilities and just other healthcare facilities?
Definitely. So as you alluded to, healthcare design is incredibly, it takes a very specialized team to do healthcare and making it ground. And behavioral health design then, in a sense, takes that complexity to this one year level.
It ratchets up.
Yes. So all the things that we've talked about today result in very complex access to various spaces for both patients and staff, meaning circulation throughout the unit, which comes very complex because you're allowing patients in some areas, staff in some areas. So access control to get very complex, frequently supplies, medical equipment flows, team service ones all become critical to the unit as well because you don't want those items, on the unit is proper. So you have to have kind of back of house ways to get things to from different locations on Disney World approach.
Yeah.
Stage, off stage, which healthcare in general does as well. But like I said, the health kind of takes that to another level.
That's a really good analogy. If for our audience, I actually know a lot about the construction of Disney World because I researched all that several years ago. And then they use these utilidors that connect underneath to different, so as to not ruin the illusion of the show, but it also keeps the general guest population away from those areas. So I'm assuming that's what you're alluding to.
And in that sense, it's about safety both for patients and staff. You know, we talked about developing trust, patients, staff. So you're designing for safety, yet you have to have good communication to get that trust and develop that trust. And so how we handle nurse stations, or what we call team of stations now, one of the best practices is to keep the team station open. A glass of barrier between the staff and patient, however, that can be the same team issue for staff. So depending on patient acuity, you may or may not put, say, glass up, but if you do, you still have to have a means for good communication during it. So that's a challenge, that then we have to understand balance that. The other thing about designing healthcare spaces is to really just understand and be knowledgeable about behavioral health, specialized products, materials, anything from ligatures, door hardware, to safety glass types, to toilet accessories, even details on how interiors interact with each other so patients can pick and pour whole things apart to either self-harm but I just then hurt them.
Can you discuss some of the innovative design elements that have shown positive impact on patient outcomes? You kind of mentioned one just a minute ago about having a clean room. Are there some others?
Absolutely. This list can be incredibly long, so that can be its own episode. But if you think about just the inpatient room, that the room with patients sleeps, the design of that, often what we will do, and it's a concept called a room of that, right? Meaning, often we will have a bench seat or a day bed or something that sits right in the front of the bed at the room to look outside. So it's creating this sort of subspace that allows the patient to sit and feel comfortable and safe. I could kind of put their back in the corner, see out the window, the outdoors. You can also see to their door, the window with the door out court. So that view to both gives them a sense of control.
Almost 360 kind of view, if you will, right?
Yeah. So their back is at their door. They'd be surprised if someone comes in. Yeah. They can still see outside. And so that whole safe self, if you will, and allows me to feel protected and kind of decimate that.
Creates control.
And then speaking of control, they would also have the ability to control lines when they talk to others. So now wine that comes to the ring. Another thing we consider in patient rooms, and really anywhere on where patients access the valving doors, are using sliding doors instead of sliding doors. Sliding doors are very easy for patients to use. They have anti-barricade characteristics, so you barricade themselves clean. It's easier to slide the door open. Now, obviously, there are anti-barricade sliding doors out available at the time. But the swing door, you have the ability to slam your fingers in the door.
Right.
Now the patients get rowdy and slam them. So with the sliding doors, there are features such as open close or soft close, soft open.
Yeah.
So that you're not sliding the board, reduces noise, keeps fingers intact, just the safer door. And that technology is getting better and better. And there's a few systems out there that would be designed for this environment. But as we progress, that technology will get them better.
Just feels like a lot of rapid evolution over a shorter period of time to really put emphasis on this. I find it very fascinating. How do you address the diverse needs of different patient populations then within one facility? You've mentioned there's a lot of different types of behavioral health that we've talked about. So I'm curious on that.
Yes. And speaking about complexity, this can get super complex. I mean, you talk about different patients, in the same unit, overall, these spaces need to be flexible, and they have to accommodate different therapies, pitch means. For example, some patients use sensory tools to help reduce stress or anxiety, and those tools can be large. And so often you'll need a large open space to answer them, as well as, storage close by to keep them out of the space and other patients in a space. So that flexibility is important. When you talk about children and adults, there has
a big difference there, right?
Yes, there has to be a distinct separation between adults and kids. You really just don't want those two populations that come the arming wings, even down to used from adult patient rooms, need to say the children's play. There's that visually and physically. Yeah, about those patient populations homes. So that can be challenging to have both population silicon, because
just from a layout perspective. Right.
Perspective, you're moving different populations around building more. So my scheduling becomes very important, but also the layout of the deck. Yeah, I was very important. You talked about tunable lighting. The lighting can address mood disorders and circadian rhythm balances. So that's helpful. The other thing that we consider in terms of flexibility is providing spaces where staff can take patients while they may be a little disruptive to the other patients, because typically the patients during the day is staying together and group setting, whether it's group therapy or just kind of hanging out at the milieu. But we will provide rooms such as quiet rooms and where staff can take a patient if they just need to get away. Than that.
Kind of get back to neutral, overstimulation.
That's right. And so you bring them to a quiet room, let them decompress a bit, and then break it back out. And the patient population is appropriate. There's another level to that, which is what we call low stimulation areas, which is kind of a smaller lounge space that will often have maybe what we call a seclusion room attached to a seclusion rooms are typically added rooms. Don't like to use them, of course, but they're there for patients that might present, danger to
little
bread. So bring them in that space, let them calm down a bit, re-legitimize them. Another topic in terms of flexibility is thinking about a psychiatric unit as opposed to a psychiatric medical. And it's not a big difference to a psychiatric unit is typically where it's strictly a mental condition. A psychiatric medical unit, there's comorbidity about with that.
Okay.
Condition. So it could be someone who, has a psychiatric mental illness. Yeah, they're venting and or, some other medical condition. Mental condition. The other patient type that could be potentially on the medical, which is very interesting, could be a patient that is like no mental condition in mental illness.
Really?
Has. In other words, you could have a patient, say, have stroke or something, tried a car accident.
Now they have something.
Now they have an injury. Say that they don't look the same things, or they can't function on half of their body. They're trying to cope with this new reality. And maybe they yell down the throat, play spot, or potential suicide watch.
Interesting.
So there are patients that can use these spaces that have no mental illness
their entire life, and then something happens to them, and
right,
they're dealing with the injury and something psychologically.
Right. So that means that those rooms and those spaces have to be incredibly flexible to accommodate such a broad patient need.
So we've spent a lot of time talking indoors layout. You've alluded to it just a few minutes ago when you talked about outdoor spaces, and you were alluding to it by, keeping different population types maybe separated. But I'm curious about designing outdoor spaces for behavioral health patients. So what's that like?
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. The outdoor spaces are equally, if not in some cases, one for the spaces. Having a variety of spaces is critical. For example, we may design a walking path that brings a patient around a space outside that would bring the light back to where they start. So having a path that is predictable, the same, is something they can anticipate, and it kind of goes back to that control. So that could be important. Different types of seating areas outside, hearing for like you can sun, shade, the ability to just relax and connect nature, listening to birds. It sounds so simple, listening to birds.
Oh, absolutely.
Like leaves and tree. Very therapeutic for all of us.
I think this is why sound machines work so well, right? We like the sound of oceans and storms and things of that nature.
Anything to reset. When we talked about, adults and children having areas outside for kids is very important. That playtime is important. But of course, keep in those areas separate from the adult spaces. And as we talked about on the inside, spaces that promote social interaction and private space, you've the people on the outside is important.
You mentioned some of these outdoor spaces, and I like sun and shade. What you may prefer may not be what somebody else prefers. My wife and I joke about this all the time because I don't get me wrong, I love sunny days, but my perfect day is actually probably overcast, a day in the fall, a little bit of rain maybe. I enjoy that, and it makes me happy and comfortable. I think for a whole lot of other people, that'd be like, that's not my favorite day at all, you know? So having these different spaces where it's like, I'd rather sit in the shade. I don't want to be out in the sun, or I do need some vitamin D, you know, and I feed off that. That's very interesting. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about staff and the folks who work in these areas. Can you discuss the importance of the staff areas in behavioral health facilities?
Absolutely. Staff areas play a huge role in the functional and therapeutic climate. First, of course, they need to be seen. Located in places where staff feel. So there has to be a clear separation between patient and staff spaces. Areas of refuge, such as staff's restroom rooms, break rooms, outdoor space that we talked about, also important for staff. Staff, this is a very stressful environment before a lot of staff members. So they need those places to decompress, to get away, to take a breath, to regroup, meditate, whether it's just an event that recently happened, the unit, or if they just sound stressed, baked, I think COVID, the whole pandemic, has really emphasized the space, not just for behavioral health staff, but maybe for healthcare wage across
everybody. Yeah. I've heard Wendy St. John on our team. She's given some presentations on this and talked a lot about it. And from her time as being a nurse, and, you know, she was like, I didn't have anywhere to go to grieve the loss of a patient. You know, like, no, I didn't know them. It wasn't like a family member or a friend, but like I cared for them. And then things took a turn and I didn't have a space to just decompress from that. So I can see where those would be super, super important. How do you, and speaking of her as a former, as a former healthcare professional, this being so specific, how do you collaborate with mental health professionals to help inform your designs?
This is a great question. Simply, we listen first. We have to be good listeners, to learn from them, and ultimately develop trust with our clients and our profession. You know, once that trust is developed, we can then begin to share some of our design experience of ours, and together we can create very powerful spaces that can truly help patients and physicians and staff as well. But we have to listen. That's the right time. We educate our clients. Or to tea for both sides.
I mean, in a way, it's kind of like what we were just talking about with Wendy, right? Like, you don't walk in and say, well, here's your solution, and then go, wait a minute, this doesn't work for me. It's got to be a two-way street for sure. Let's talk a little bit about technology and what role it plays in modern behavioral health facility design.
Yeah, there is no question technology has reshaped our lives, especially what we receive healthcare. Telehealth is very common to be utilized, whether it be for diagnosis, treatment, or even for virtual court hearings for, I believe, facility or the unit. Absolutely. So that's very common to do that. Behavioral health staff often meet wearables that are used to communicate with their staff or security. I have wearables on to have a duress button, so it's a safety feature for them as well.
Yeah.
If they need support or they need to potentially take your situation. So that's great.
Well, and here's the obligatory reference to all things AI. Do you see AI playing a role in any future of design, specifically in regard to these behavioral health facilities?
Absolutely. AI, this is another topic.
Right. I'm picking up on it. If you've listened to the show before, I typically ask something about AI or future-based design. And it'd probably be its own episode. But
no question. You know, AI technology is amazing and it's scary. It can actually provide early detection of mental health issues by analyzing data from various sources. And it can provide early interventions to individuals at risk. Now, I don't claim being an expert,
right?
But I've researched enough to know that technology does exist. It can contribute to early detection and diagnosis by analyzing things like language patterns. It analyzes social media activity, interesting. And it can sense our data from wireless. We talked about causing it all to identify initial signs of wellness issues. It's amazing. Well, even natural language processing can further assist thing. You know, analysis, text, or speech, feelings, even the language markers into that are associated with conditions. So, you know, there's a whole privacy discussion
sure. On
this topic, of course, and cost. But understanding that the technology does exist, it is important to inform, you know, what type of infrastructure we can start developing. And vehicle health facility can support the mining all in the state.
Right. And I'm assuming as it's happening, it's just evolving so rapidly. I just happened to notice the other day, I have an Apple Watch and running updates all the time. And I track all my workouts and that stuff through my watch. And it started popping up training workload. So it's like, hey, you went really heavy over the last 3 to 5 days. You're going to start to, basically you can see the data showing like, here's the baseline. If you've been too high, you're going to start to feel that workload. And you should probably bring it back to neutral, or you need a rest day. It can suggest those sorts of things. I think that stuff's fascinating. I'm sure we're just starting to scratch the surface on things like that. I can't imagine some of the impacts that could make for these behavioral health patients as well. So that's pretty exciting stuff.
No doubt.
So we'll stick with the futuristic kind of thinking. What trends do you foresee in behavioral health facility design over the next decade, let's say? Which I know is hard to predict because yes. 10 years is a long time, but
it is. But I, you know, for me, from my perspective, I think it's important to continue the development of integrated care model, which is basically a comprehensive approach that combines primary care with behavioral health services. And what it does is it really provides patients a holistic approach to health care by addressing both physical and mental
needs. Tell them that.
What I'd love to see is a more robust integrated care model for kids.
It is.
I think it's important to develop this further. There's some really good programs out there, but it needs to be more robust across the nation that hopefully increase access to care for many and get out ahead of some of the health issues that we see. Diabetes, heart disease, and depression. So many people struggle with it today.
Yeah.
Our facilities need to be more and more flexible to accommodate mental needs for both kids and adults.
Yeah, and you bring up a good one with kids. I have 5 children, various ages, of course. And, you know, the pandemic was a disruption. And that's not meant to be a comment either way on anything. More to speak to the fact of it was such a dramatic deviation from their normal schedules. And we've seen it with our kids and our friends' kids that disruption still has ripple effects a few years later. You know,
absolutely.
So it's interesting that you mentioned that because I can see it in our everyday life as well. Well, this has been a very kind of heavy topic. Behavioral health is kind of a heavy topic. You've brought up a lot of great things. I have one last question for you, and hopefully we end on kind of an upswing note, if you will. Favorite project you've worked on?
Yeah, it's a good question. And difficult question. Every project has its own wonderful story, right?
And there's a piece of you in them, right? No, like you put yourself into them.
For sure. We all throw our heart and soul into our work.
Yeah.
So it's all important. But my simple answer is, you know, my favorite project is the crown.
Yeah.
The reason I say that is as designers, we take what we research and what we learn from mental health professionals and for each other on every project, and we apply that collective data to the next project.
Right.
So theoretically, each project should get better and better as we progress.
Yeah.
So really, for me, it's about process, and I love the process method.
That's awesome. Very Tom Brady-esque too. If you've ever heard him talk about that, what's your favorite championship? The current one or the next one, you know? And it's about the process and diving in, seeing if we can make it better and improve. So that's great. Well, thank you for joining me on the show. This has been really insightful and a very fun conversation.
Sure. Thank you.
Thanks again to Derek for joining me on this episode of BSA by Design. You can connect with him on LinkedIn. If you're interested in learning more about BSA Life Structures or our design culture, we encourage you to visit our website at bsalifestructures.com. bsabydesign.com. There's a link in the show notes to contact us for more information. Be sure to subscribe to BSA by Design on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, so you don't miss an episode. And we've got more content and project stories to share on social media, so be sure to follow us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and X. That's going to do it for this episode. Join us again next time on BSA by Design.